And good morning, and thank you for tuning in to 88.5 KRFY. We're live here in the studios on First Avenue, and we're happy to be here for the KRFY Morning Show. I'm Susie Prez, one of your hosts, and good morning over there, Chris Bessler.
Good morning, Susie. I'm your co-host this morning.
It's nice to have you, and we're here with a special edition of the end of the year, last Tuesday, December 29th of 2015. So we have guests in the studio. We have the reader guys, I call you. Ben Olson, publisher, and Cameron Rasmussen, editor.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
And yes. Cameron, someone actually asked me to ask you to please speak right into the microphone, just about like that.
There we go.
Perfect. You've got a great voice. It can tend to go out if you move around too much. So we're here to talk about, what are we here to talk about, Chris?
Well, we are going to take a look. We're into the analysis and prognostication phase of our year here. We're going to take a look back at what our media guys here think were the biggest stories of the year here in Sandpoint, local stories. And then we're going to flip around and take a look at what they predict will be the biggest stories of 2016. And then next year about this time, we'll look back and see if Ben and Cameron had it right.
Okay, we could make a yearly thing here, last Tuesday of the year. And before we get started with that, which sounds really exciting, and we can add things too, right, Chris, if we have...
You bet. In fact, I made up my own list. Susie, I imagine you had at least one or two things on your list as to big stories that that had an impact on people's life here.
Yeah, I do have a couple of things. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about the weather. We've had a lot of snow, and from the National Weather Service, currently it's 23 degrees out. We have a 40% chance of snow showers today, a high getting up to 23. Well, that's what they're saying anyways at the National Weather Service. Tonight, 20% chance of snow showers with areas of freezing fog. And low tonight is 18. And Wednesday through Thursday, maybe even through Friday, it's just patchy fog, freezing fog. So that's what you can expect. Highs around 25 and lows in the... it gets down to 8 degrees on Thursday, so there you go.
Well, the freezing fog doesn't sound particularly nice.
Sounds like some strange thing from a B-movie. Yeah. Attack of the freezing fog.
Yeah, it actually creates some hazardous driving conditions. We had an awfully nice Christmas, though, with
beautiful.
A lot of nice fresh snow for that. Also outside, the sunrise this morning was at 7:37 a.m. The sunset was at 3:59 p.m., Now, we're just a week past the winter solstice, which is just about a week ago. That means every day is getting a little bit longer now. And in the past week, wait for it, we've gained 8 minutes of daylight.
Oh, that's encouraging.
Yeah.
It's very good.
So every day is going to have a little more sunlight. The moonrise tonight will be at 9:01 p.m. and it's 80% full. So if we do have a break in those freezing clouds, we'll have a little bit of moonlight out there. And actually, if you're a cross-country skier or snowshoer, it's a really cool time to be outside. At night, the snow is reflecting a lot of light, and you can see quite well. If you're into adventuring, that's a good thing to do. Schweitzer has 3 inches of new snow in the last 24 hours. It's currently 20 degrees in the village, only 11 degrees at the summit, so it is chilly. They have all 92 runs open. They have all 9 lifts going, and they have 40 groomed trails. So Schweitzer is cooking with gas up there.
Happy, happy skiers.
Yeah.
Anyone a big skier here? Like you have to be there anytime there's powder?
No. Before I was a newspaper man, I was a huge skier, but now I've kind of had to put that on hold this year.
You got up at all?
I went up there and played music at Taps.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But that's about the extent of my Schweitzer
experience. I got up in the afternoon on Christmas Eve, and it was really nice.
I've heard especially it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've always just been a middling skier in terms of the number of times that I go up and give it a run every year, but it's still something that I enjoy. Certainly that it was an attraction to moving to this area for me, so I am looking forward to trying it out for myself here soon.
Yeah.
Well, the conditions are really nice right now, especially after the drought we had last year. So if you are a skier, good time to get up there.
Yes, indeed. And once again, this is 88.5 KRFY, and this is the morning show with Chris and Susie. And our guest, Cameron Rasmussen, he's the editor of The Reader, and Ben Olson, publisher of The Reader. And I wanted to get started with something that I noted that happened, and it's kind of a little bit of a quiz here, guys.
No.
You probably get it pretty quick, but to me, it's something that was significant in our community that brought flavor and pizzazz and very, very brought more interest to what's going on here in our community. And it happened, and you can try to make the guess if you want to. It started on January 22nd, 2015. You're laughing, of course, you know what that is.
Yeah.
But to me, that was a big deal. So who wants to guess and start it off?
Well, Ben, do you want to take this one?
What is the Sandpoint Reader?
That's it. You get it. You get that one, Jeopardy.
All right.
Player. But it really, truly was a big deal for our community. And just to do it again, say thank you to the hard work that you guys put into bringing that back to us.
I think the thanks are mostly due to the people that are reading it and advertising in it, too. And it wouldn't succeed unless those people supported it as much as they do. And so we've had a great community reaction. We're super happy to be back.
We'd also be remiss if we didn't give a shout-out to our contributors who really just help us out every week, you know, filling those pages with content that people want to read. And, we really appreciate all of the interest that goes into that paper from people who want to be a part of it. And so big thanks goes out to them as well.
It's a community endeavor. And I sometimes use the word relaunch or the coming back, but you know, it's a whole new thing.
Yeah, it's new and it's the same. You know, it's a weird amalgam of the old Reader and the new Reader. And I kept a lot of the old features the same because I thought that they worked. And it had, you know, the Reader's been around for 7 years, and so I didn't want to change it drastically. I wanted to give people what they liked about it, but give them a little bit more. And I think it's worked so far.
Great way to start out 2015.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's been the quickest year I've ever had.
Like I have to say, I agree with you. This year just went by in a blink of an eye, it felt like. So.
Plus, when you're working against deadline, you're never asking for the clock to hurry up.
No, not at all.
It's crazy. It's like laying railroad track and the train's behind you, you know, moving and it's never stopping. So that's kind of how it feels to me.
Yeah. Okay, so this is our prognostication analysis show. And first of all, we want to talk about what were some of the big stories were in the past year. And Susie identified that as one. The town gained a new or a revamped newspaper, The Reader. So Cam, let's start with you. What do you think some of the big stories of the year were?
All right. Well, I suppose, the election this year was, as good a place to start as any. I thought that was a remarkable election for a lot of reasons. Not the least of which is just the divide in mentalities that's present in this community, because definitely when it came to, in particular, the mayoral candidates, there were pretty clear distinctions between the two camps that you would see, especially as discussions played out online and in public forums and things like this. Not only that, but then also it was remarkable for the turnout. I suppose that it brought it. It was really the most interest that we've seen in a local election in quite a while. And you know, when you consider the fact that I believe it was, and correct me if I misspeak here, but I believe it was just under half the registered voters turned out to vote in that election. And so it's a bit both like a good sign, but also a bit of an indictment on our public interest as well. So
indictment how?
I would say that when those are numbers that you are cheered by, it's
they're still pretty low.
Yeah, it's still not an ideal state of affairs, I would say. And But you know, things rarely are. So, yes.
And we're talking there about the city election where we had a very feisty campaign for mayor. Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, though, we only had the incumbents running for city council. So it was kind of a dichotomy in that sense as well, that we had a very well-contested mayoral race, but mm-hmm. in city council, we didn't even scrape up enough candidates to have a contested race.
Yeah, yeah, and that's another great point to bring up is, I've been here for a number of years now. I've seen a few local races play out, and usually I remember one where it was only a couple of years ago, and it was a very well-packed roster of candidates. And so it was a bit of a surprise and also a bit of a disappointment to see that there was no other person that wanted to put their hat in the ring for what, you know, I would say is one of the more influential local public offices to be had if you want to make a difference.
And actually in 2013, they had 9 candidates going for 3 open seats.
So,
drop off. And maybe some of those candidates just got discouraged in that election and people figured that they would take a pass. But even though you may like the candidates that won, the incumbents, it's always makes the system a little weaker when it's not a contested race, in my opinion.
Well, and, you know, a contest also forces the incumbents to bring their A game as well. You know, they're under a lot more pressure to answer questions from the public, you know, turn in surveys to institutions like our newspaper or Sandpoint Online. And it only enhances the process of helping the public knowing what they're getting. And so it's disappointing disappointing may be a little bit of a strong word, but it's just too bad that we didn't have the chance to really dig into that like we could have in a contested race.
And we, of course, the result of that race, we have a new mayor, Shelby Ronstadt, and he takes office, I think, first week, January 6th, actually.
That's mm-hmm. correct.
And actually, there was another election last year. I'm going to tag on to that, and that was the school board election. And, and it actually presented a similar sort of choice to voters between probably candidates that would typically be your mainstream Republicans and candidates that were more conservative. And in that election, there were candidates for the trustee zone 1 and trustee zone 4. There were 2 candidates for each of those. In zone 1, Joel Molander, the incumbent, defeated Kathy Rose. In zone 4, Geraldine Lewis defeated Tom Cleveland. That was an open seat. But in that case, the two opponents that lost in there were also the more conservative opponents. The interesting thing there, and I can speak as a media person myself, was that Kathy Rose and Tom Cleveland didn't actually communicate through the media. Did the reader have success in getting interviews with those candidates?
Well, with Kathy Rose, she sent us in just a brief statement of what she was about and what some of her thoughts were, but she declined to have any kind of an interview or anything like that. That was the most that we got out of her. And with Tom Cleveland, we were unable to get him to return our requests for an interview or even a statement at all. Right. He was shut down.
And, of course, the KRFY now with the morning show, we're making an attempt to cover the elections ourselves. And both of those candidates declined to come in, which gave an open microphone to their two opponents, which, again, it actually, I think, weakens the electoral system a little bit when we can't have that public debate, because it's through that we test our ideas. Whether you oppose or favor particular candidates, it's important to know where they stand, because they're going to end up representing you.
Yeah, I think that's a trend that's happening nowadays. I think that there's a lot of mistrust in the media, and they're not using the media to their advantage to get their word out there and their positions. And, you know, the media is a tool for press you know, public relations. Right. It's a tool for politicians. It's a tool for anybody to use, because you can actually set the story on the right track. And when you don't participate in the media or don't answer interview calls and don't get back, it's, you're only really hurting yourself, you know.
There certainly seems to be a narrative among candidates that tend to be toward the more toward the right wing, that don't go with the media because they're going to twist your words and try and make you look bad. They're against you right out of the gate. And honestly, a question and answer type of format is I don't see why you wouldn't take advantage of that, because there's really no room to twist there. You're just reprinting what they've said.
It's the equivalent of T-ball.
It's
placed right on the tee for you. You just got to whack it.
And without having had a more detailed conversation with Kathy or Tom, I suspect they were going by that playbook. And like I say, this is somewhat speculative on my part because I haven't had the chance to talk to them. But I suspect they were going by that playbook that says, don't talk to the media, communicate with your supporters directly. And we've seen some local politicians do that with some success. But in a school board election, I just don't think the level of voter interest was there to really turn that into a success story for those two candidates.
Okay, so elections, you identify that as one of the big stories of the year locally. Ben, take another whack at it. What was another big story locally in 2015?
Well, one that impacted the area and myself as well. I feel like the wildfires this summer were a pretty huge story. It took a lot of our manpower to cover that. There was so much going on so early in the season and so late in the season that it kind of dominated the news for I don't know, over 2 months. I feel like we were just like constantly updating people, Facebook status, what's burning, what's spreading, what's starting to be contained. The one that kind of kicked it off the most for me personally was the Cape Horn fire. And that's kind of the one that I feel like everybody started to understand that it was a crazy fire season. Just covering that and going down to Bayview and talking to the residents at those open meetings, and then in the aftermath, getting access to the burned areas and taking photographs. That was really an experience for me, and I really appreciated getting back there and seeing like what fire damage does and how arbitrary it is. But it was a wild season. I mean, there were over 300 fires reported in the Idaho Panhandle National Forest. And I think at one time we had over 125 burning simultaneously, which is kind of what IDL, they had a quote that said it was the worst fire season since 1926, I think it was. And that's kind of what it was. It was just so much at the same time. And there were, almost 30,000 firefighters mobilized. It was just a huge season.
Mm-hmm. So. And it really cast a pall over the town, the whole area. Late in the summer, there was so much smoke up in the air. I'm pretty sure that we saw a decline in tourism during that period of time.
I think so too. I think that one of the reasons people come to Sandpoint, either to live or to visit, is it's just the quality of life and the quality of air and the clean lake. And so when you have this, hazy, it looks like Los Angeles on a sweltery day, you can't even see the Baldy Mountain from town. It's like, it doesn't seem like what Sandpoint's all about. And, we even saw people with their painter's masks on, and it was kind of surreal after a while when you just have smoke every day.
One of the things that came to my mind when that was going on all through the summer was, how prepared are we as a community to a fire on the west side of town with strong winds? How prepared are we? How healthy are our forests? And do we, what's the plan now that we know the potential? And it was a very dry year last year, mm-hmm. that really kind of supplied that tinder for those kind of fires. But the winds and everything else, and the lack of rain. So that's what came to my mind, is how prepared are we?
Yeah, and to give our firefighters credit from every department, whether it was IDL or the local Selkirk Fire Department, or the state, it was, they were, they did such a good job, and they were so well received by the community. And they had a lot of those structure engines that were just basically staged to help houses, you know, to help save houses. And we live in this dangerous zone where we're so close to all these huge timber areas. And, you know, you saw it in the big burn in 1910 is, you know, Wallace just got annihilated because they had a windstorm that came up at the wrong moment. And as we well know, we've had these windstorms keep happening. And I don't remember these happening that much growing up here. We've had three, I think, this year. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And they're kind of, they're called microbursts.
Yeah. And it's just wild. It's like, if that happens at the wrong moment during a fire season, you can have something devastating. And that's something that's very serious around here, because we, you know, A, we value our lands and our forests and our timber, but B, we all don't want to, you know, have our town burned down. You know, it's a terrible thing.
Yeah. 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 I'd say the windstorms actually rank up there as a pretty big one. I think our last one was in mid to late November.
Yeah. I think the 17th. Yeah.
And that put down a lot of trees around here, but Spokane got particularly hard hit. And there were people without electricity for several weeks after that.
Right. Yeah. Avista released a press release that said something like it was the number one worst disaster that they've had to deal with in their entire 126-year history. I mean, they said that they had more outages and just more sheer work to clean up after that than any other time, including, you know, all these other crazy storms in the past.
Yeah.
Well, I felt that was pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's true that the weather conditions this year have really put the infrastructure to the test. Even with all of our heavy snowfalls recently, we over Christmas we saw how how many homes in the region were out of power just because of the intense snowfalls. And that was certainly a surprise. I think we all had power go out in town for a couple of hours in the middle of the night, one night, maybe about a weekend, some days ago. Mm-hmm. And that was, that was also a surprise.
So locally, the extremes in the weather patterns, but also nationally, it possibly doesn't affect us so much, but nationally, the same thing. It's 70 degrees right now on the East Coast.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you've been watching the news and the weather, which I'm sure weather is one of those, you know, binding factors of humanity. Everybody watches the weather. If you've been watching it lately, you can see what's going on all across the country. And there's just, it's just wild right now. Things are happening. And I think we're getting the fun part of the extreme weather, which is lots and lots of snow.
Yeah.
Right now we are.
Yeah, right now.
Here. I'm going to throw one more in that pot of wild weather and fires, and that is earthquakes.
Mm. Oh, yes.
We had a couple earthquakes here in town this year. In town, well, they were actually centered under Lake Pend'Oreille.
Right.
And I believe the larger one was 3.4, pretty small compared to what they get in California or other parts. But it's unusual here. It has been, at least in my experience, to feel an earthquake. And wasn't there a story that they think one of the fault lines that run through here might be waking up?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I said, the Purcell Trench.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting thought. One of the things that came out of that is I found a great website. I just type in U.S. and it's Did You Feel It?
Mm. Yeah.
It's a geological site, and it shows where they're happening all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
But you can see your own area, or Yellowstone and kind of this inland northwest, see what's going on. So it's kind of, we're learning about geology through this process.
It's another one of those funny phenomenon I don't remember experiencing that growing up here. I don't remember there ever being an earthquake up here before. And I lived in California for 4 or 5 years while I was working down there, and I never felt one of the earthquakes that happened while I was there. I was always traveling out of the area, or I was doing something different. And so I think it's odd that the first earthquake I ever felt was here in Sandpoint.
Well, I should say so. I'd never felt an earthquake before. That incident toward the late summer when, you know, the first earthquake rolled around. And right now it's a bit of a joke because they've been just little shakes. And I got a great laugh out of when that first earthquake rolled around, and I saw that Facebook page, the Sandpoint Earthquake Survivors page. And, you know,
with a chair tipped
over. Pictures of a chair tipped over with the words "We will rebuild" and stuff like that. And yeah, let's hope that it just stays in the spot where we, you know, feel a little jiggle, and then we can laugh about it afterward, because I'm sure we don't want to deal with some of the more earthquake-prone regions of our country deal with.
I'm interested in this Purcell fault line. I think maybe someone should do some research on that.
Might not be a bad call. Yeah. I'm intrigued by it now, too.
Yeah, there actually have been a couple of stories. I think the Spokesman Review had a good story on that just last week. Okay, next one. Wildfires, weather, and earthquakes all made news during the past year, the election. What's Susie?
Okay, I have one. It's civic oriented. Jeremy Grimm was our city planner and development person, and he had been in the office there for almost 8 years, and he resigned to go over to Coachella, and he's very excited about that. And the city decided to hire an administrator. I thought that was big, kind of a move. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it means we're growing or we anticipate growth, but Jeremy did amazing work to bring this community up financially, and I don't know, development-wise, I would say. And now we have a new administrator taking over to do some work on holding the city together.
Well, I know that from the city's perspective, they're hoping that this will be the one of the necessary ingredients for Sandpoint to achieve that kind of growth. And certainly the new city administrator is quite hopeful and optimistic about Sandpoint's outlook as we move forward. But you're definitely right. This is a big shift in the way Sandpoint structures its, you know, local administration. I'd imagine that things will be hashing out in City Hall right now to define exactly what that relationship will look like when the city administrator interacts with department heads.
And that hiring process came under some fire. And in fact, the Daily Bee, the publisher, Jim McKiernan, editorialized on that, I think, on Sunday's paper. I don't know if you guys caught that.
Mm-hmm.
The process was criticized as being, one, you know, too compact, too short for hiring for such a basically a big position in this town. Do you guys have any observations on that?
I think it is an important position, because if you get the wrong person in that position of city administrator, I believe that, you know, growth is a very, you have to handle growth correctly. You can't open the floodgates. There's a reason the Sandpoint is a little different than Coeur d'Alene. You know, we don't, there's a lot different than Coeur d'Alene. You know, Coeur d'Alene is Sandpoint on steroids, really. There's a lot of rampant growth, the giant condos and resort buildings and things like that. And I don't think Sandpoint really wants to embrace that yet. And so having an administrator that is on board with that idea, where they want the town to grow, but organically and with a sustained path, I think that it's important that people are involved in that process. So I do agree that I feel like the citizens should have had a little bit more of an input, at least meeting the top five candidates or the top three candidates, as opposed to meeting the one candidate and saying, here they are, we're going to choose this candidate soon, but you can talk to them now if you want. You know, I thought that was a gesture, but it was, you know, I feel like they could have done a little bit better.
And that would have, it sounds like you're thinking, would allow the candidates to get a flavor of our true town. These mm-hmm. are the citizens.
Yeah.
This is what they've been living with. The difference between Coeur d'Alene and Sandpoint is Coeur d'Alene's on I-90 and 35 miles from a huge metropolitan area, Spokane. And I hope that's the thing that keeps the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I also think that some of those complaints about the process are pretty well justified. They've got good reason for bringing them up. You know, personally, I think it's a little disappointing that when you have an incident like that, where it's an aspect of local government that people really do want to be a part of, and they want to go out to these public forums and see, you know, potential candidates, you know, all lined up and ready to have questions thrown at them about their vision of Sandpoint and just governance in general. You know, that's something that we don't see enough of. And when you get a lot of cries for, yeah, let's have a public forum, let's have three candidates, let's all hash everything out. You know, it's disappointing when they don't have that satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we heard some justifications from the established local officials about why that is. I believe Shelby Ronstadt said in an interview during the election season that he was concerned for the candidates' well-being in their current jobs. You know, if they didn't necessarily want their employers knowing that they were looking for other options. And so whether that is, you know, something that the public will accept or not, I suppose, is for each member to decide for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that is a fourth big news story from the year. Let's do one more, then we're going to go to a break. Ben, you got another issue or story you would identify as a big one that had an impact on people's lives locally last year?
Yeah, and I feel like it's one that's actually still impacting us, and I feel like it's the local angle on the large worldwide issue of the refugee crisis that's going on right now. I feel like there is, and we could talk about this for the entire show if
yeah.
we wanted to, so we'll keep it short, but I feel like there's a polarization of opinion for this issue, especially in North Idaho. We've seen, you know, Boundary and Bonner County commissioners pass resolutions stating that they want the process ended. Governor Otter has worded very strongly that he's against it. So is our Sheriff Daryl Wheeler. The city, on the other hand, is introducing a resolution to support refugees. Both actions are symbolic because they don't have any impact on anything. But both actions have been coming under fire from both sides.
And you say they don't have any impact on anything because it's outside the purview of these local officials.
Yeah, it's a federal issue. It's you know, states can certainly voice their opinions, but they're not the deciding factors in this issue. And what I think is really happening is we are casting ourselves into that pit of bigotry and racism again by allowing this xenophobia and fear to take over our process, whether you agree with it or not. I think that for the most part, misinformation has taken the driver's seat in a lot of these situations.
You talk about that issue as polarizing. Do you have any idea of how that could be turned around? What could happen to change that?
You know, I don't know. I don't know how to change public opinion in North Idaho. I think that there are a lot of people that have compassionate points of view, no matter which side of the aisle that they sit on. I think there are people that expect the worst and are doomsayers and will rely on fear to you know, drive themselves forward. I don't know how to affect public opinion other than to give them facts. And that's kind of what we've chosen to do with this whole issue. We went to Spokane and we talked to a couple of actual refugees that had been resettled in the area. We talked about how, you know, how they're vetted, their process, what they came from, how they've, you know, assimilated into American culture. And both stories that we heard from these people, they're very touching and heartwarming, but they're also they're backing up and they're evidence that, you know, this isn't just an open door policy. This is a very long process, and there's a lot of claims out there on the internet that, you know, people are, you know, they're refugees allowed into America and they're going on the dole and their welfare and et cetera, et cetera. You know, these are actually people that are getting jobs and paying taxes and becoming American and very happy to become American. And that's kind of where we all started. And so we have tried to cover this with a very factual angle.
And, And I'd like to just mention that, you know, I in researching this and talking to people about this, it does, there do appear to be a lot of, you know, reasonable and fact-based positions on why this particular incident of refugee migration does pose some security risks. But at the same time, in some of the public meetings that I've attended, reasonable discourse was not what I saw there. I saw hysteria. I saw fear. I saw people demanding that their public officials take actions that they're not legally entitled to do, and that is unsettling. It
including religious profiling.
Yeah.
Which is un-American and unconstitutional.
I can't think of anything much more un-American than that. You know, our First Amendment rights are some of the rights that we hold dearest, and so that is what is unsettling to me about this whole story. Is that I've never seen in all of my time reporting a more fearful group of people than I've seen in some of those meetings. And we all know that when pressed into a position where some kind of existential dread is allowed to foster in the minds of a group of people, ugliness is often soon to follow. And that's what is disturbing to me. I hope that people can keep a level head as these stories continue to unfold.
And this is next part of our show. We're going to talk about what's coming up in the next year. I'm sure that is going to be one of the things that come up. It's going to kick off right actually very early, because the city council is going to be considering a resolution in support, as you mentioned, I think at their January 6th council meeting. It's at least tentatively scheduled. So that one is going to be a big one going forward. We're going to take a musical break. Actually, I wanted to mention just a couple more things, throw out there that I thought were big in the year. I don't want to discuss them, but one was the new railroad depot opened. I thought after years, and it's been around for 100 years, that was a pretty significant thing. They refurbished the railroad depot, and it's a beautiful building now. And then the other thing that was really pretty big was the local option tax to improve Memorial Field, rebuild the Memorial Field stadium, passed a couple other big things that had an impact here in town. Now,
okay.
Susie?
Well, I first want to remind our listeners, this is 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. We're here looking at the year that we are almost ending and looking ahead to 2016 with Ben Olson, publisher of The Reader, and Cameron Rasmussen, editor of The Reader, Sandpoint Reader. But we're going to hear a song because, you know, when you think about some of the things that can kind of balance out some of the things we've been talking about that maybe aren't so good, I think music is one of the things to turn to. And this is John Mellencamp, Small Town. We'll be right back. Stay with us. And that was John Mellencamp, Our Town. And I scrolled it down a little early because we have so much to talk about right here on 88.5 KRFY, the morning show. And Chris, do you want to introduce our guests again? We've been talking with
Ben Olson, publisher of the Sandpoint Reader, and Cameron Rasmussen, the editor of the Sandpoint Reader. And this is our end of the year show. We've spent the first part of this show talking about some of the big stories that happened in the past year. And now we want to put on the prognostication hat and take a look at 2016. What do you think some of the big stories will be coming up in this next year?
Well, let me just get my crystal ball warmed up here. I think are we casting our looks more locally and regionally?
I say locally, regionally, okay. Yeah.
You know, I think just something that we kind of just broke recently was the Tamarack was just got European approval, And actually, Cameron Moore knows about this.
Tamarack Aerospace.
They designed a
device that goes on airplanes to improve their efficiency, basically. They're called.
And actually, Cameron knows a lot more about this than I do, so I'm going to...
Well, yeah. Tamarack is one of those companies that local officials have been very excited about for many years now because they really have caused a buzz in their industry with their this active winglet technology that is able to, to get past all the complexities of its engineering and right to the grist of the matter, is able to save somewhere in the realm of 10% to 15% in airplane fuel costs. Right now, it's designed for a particular model of the Cessna Citation jet line, and they've already have agreements lined up with Cessna, and they've already got orders rolling in, and what certification allows them to do is finally sell and install these winglet packages, and that's the first step into what a lot of local economic development folks have long been bookmarking as one of the big companies with a lot of promise. And so, boy, you know, if things continue along the path that they hope, we could see a very flourishing business there, within a few years.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing that could become basically standard equipment on planes. Yeah. And could have a huge impact.
Well, yes,
on
they
air travel and, of course, the local economy. If assuming they stay here and do their a good chunk of their can work here.
Well, the people at Tamarack are they do not shy away from lofty claims when it comes to their faith in their technology. They are, they're not saying, oh, this is a good product that all aviators will want to consider. They're saying this is going to change the face of aviation.
Yeah.
And so when they have that level of confidence, it's a little hard not to get excited about the potential there.
Yep. Okay. What else, Ben? What else is on your list of prognostications?
Well, it's not so much of a happy one, but I feel like we are, we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but I feel like we are kind of sinking into a little bit of a Islamophobic misinformation zone worldwide, nationwide, and regionally. And I feel like misinformation is going to dominate 2016. And I feel like we need a lesson in media literacy, what sources to trust. What sources are bogus?
So how do I mean? That's obviously like endemic to the entire country or the world, if you will. So how do local folks sort out, where to get good information?
Well, you gotta trust the sources that you trust and question the sources that you don't trust, and find out if there's an agenda. I welcome people challenging the reader with claims of bias and this and that because I know that Cameron and I both spend a lot of time making sure that we aren't catering to one side or the other. We're catering to the facts and to the story. I will answer to anybody who says that we're biased. We have opinion in our paper, but we also have an adherence to the facts. And it's important to us to tell the story how it should be told, relying on sources that aren't, these long web addresses that are made by some, guy who you don't even know who he is, and all these, fair and balanced news sources that don't actually attach a byline to their articles. And I just feel like journalism is starting to decline, and I want to prop it up and I want to make it more sacred again. It's hallowed ground, and to ruin the journalistic morality of America is a crime, really.
And that could be a whole show unto itself right there.
I was just going to say, but in a nutshell, what are those tenets or the mission of good journalism? It's an ethical process.
Well, it absolutely is. You have to, well, Cameron, I mean, give him a little journalism 101 lesson.
Well, a little one, because we have other things to talk about.
We're quickly running out of time. All I'll say is that when Ben and I went down to our conference, we had an Idaho Press Club conference earlier this year, and this was one of the subject of media literacy was one of the items that was presented. Because it is so important right now, what I would just encourage people to do is, you know, when you are choosing what type of information to adhere to, and what type of articles to follow, just kind of question what are the motives behind the article. You know, I can tell you personally that I adhere to the truth. You know, my mission is to seek after the truth, you know, and to leave people more informed and more understanding of different groups of people or different processes or different institutions than when they you know, first started reading the article. And sometimes I'm more successful at that, and sometimes I'm less successful at that, as we all are. But, you know, people will have to take my word when they say that that is our objective.
And the hope is that individuals will take that responsibility upon themselves to do what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being an informed citizen, it mm-hmm. takes a little bit of work on everybody's part. Okay, other things. I'm going to throw out one. That we will not be able to avoid, no matter where you live here in town, that is the election. Mm. Of course, the presidential election is going to create a huge amount of noise and fury, but we're going to have some interesting local elections as well. Of course, every 2 years, all three of our state legislators come up for election. So Sean Keogh's state Senate seat's going to be up. She's already declared that she's running again. And there's already been two opponents that have declared mm-hmm. via Facebook.
Right.
Danielle Ahrens and Glenn Rohrer mm-hmm. have both declared for that. And then as well, Heather Scott's seat and Sage Dixon's seats and the House are going to be up for election. We'll have two county commission seats up. I believe Carrie Kelly's seat and Todd Sudik's seat are coming up for election. And I'm not sure other things down or up the ballot, but I will. That's my prediction. We're going to hear a lot about the elections.
Yeah, it's going to be an election-heavy year.
This primary election that is coming up, in particular in the Republican camp, is going to be very interesting to follow because, once again, we're seeing this clash between the mainstream Republicans, as you might say, even though it's starting to a greater divide than we've seen ever before is starting to present itself. And so this is going to be yet another interesting year as far as that's concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when we get to the general election, this coming year has the potential for a lot of interesting developments, I think.
Yes. We've already seen that.
Yes.
At least in the presidential election.
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, throw us another one. What's another prediction you have for what's coming up this year?
Well, there's a group called New Approach Idaho that's just about collected all the signatures they need to put a ballot on the 2016 election to legalize medical marijuana. And I think that's going to be a historical thing for Idaho to actually even have that on the ballot, whether it passes or not. I'm not hopeful, but
that's what I'm going to ask. What's your prediction on that?
Yeah.
You think Idahoans will go for that now that
I think Idaho,
Washington's done it. Oregon just approved, not even medical marijuana. They're talking about recreational marijuana there.
And I thought that, you know, Idaho is we are dominated by the southern part of the state, and the southern part of the state is very conservative, and they are very, the chances of us passing this ballot on the ballot are very slim. Oregon, when they passed it their first week, their first 6 days of sales raised something like $10 or $11 million, which I thought was something that Idaho lawmakers should take note of
that was recreational.
That was recreational. Yeah.
Saw the huge numbers there.
The tide is going there. I mean, the country, there's 23 states right now that are medicinally legalized, and there are, I believe, 4 states plus Washington, D.C. that have legalized recreational use. In 20 years, marijuana will be legal across the land. I will stake my, you know, my small salary on that. Idaho is dragging its feet. We could be having an amazing tax boost if we embrace, you know, what all the other states in the West and the country are starting to move forward to. So we'll see that on the ballot, whether it passes or not. I can't give an answer to that.
Okay. Cam, throw us another prediction. What's another big story coming up this year?
Oh, another big story. Well, this coming year is the year that we're projected to have our downtown streets reconfiguration, and that's going to be a big change, not only in terms of the way that, you know, we get around throughout the downtown core, but also it's one of those necessary steps in what the city has wanted to do for a long time with some of their revitalization plans in the downtown core. And so we've been seeing a lot of these issues kind of come out piecemeal in council meetings, you know, things like outdoor cafes that stretch out into the, you know, little eateries that stretch out into the street or
the
public thoroughfare. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And things like this. But until that reconfiguration happens, that's going to be
that'll be pretty unavoidable, because a lot of our one-way streets, in fact, all of the one-way streets in downtown are set to go two-way. Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that all those people that go the wrong way down Church Street will now be okay?
It'll be legal.
So scary?
Yes, you know, that is going to be quite the reversal, in so many words.
We'll have to get used to it.
Fifth Avenue, the whole linchpin here is Fifth Avenue going two-way, for that little section between Cedar and Pine, and that's going to allow the state to reroute the State Highway 2 onto that section of street, mm-hmm. which will release all the other downtown streets where the State Highway now currently winds through downtown. So big change there. I definitely agree with you. That's going to be one that's quite unavoidable for folks.
It's probably the first time in history that the locals will drive worse than the out-of-towners.
I know. That's right.
So do you have any predictions, Chris, for 2016 coming up?
Well, I predict a big game changer is going to be, they're just now doing work to pull conduit through the downtown streets to put in fiber optic, and that they're supposed to light it up maybe as early as spring. Part of it, it's going to bring fiber optic internet, very high speed internet to the downtown. It's going to be a great business booster, because companies that rely on very high speed internet will now see Sandpoint, at least our downtown, as a viable place to locate. So I'm positive that could be a good thing.
I have one thing I'm looking forward to watching is the continued development of North Idaho College as a viable. I mean, I always felt that this community could use a 4-year college. It would kind of identify it in a really good way.
Well, yeah, the expression is that Sandpoint is the perfect college town without a college.
Yeah.
And, you know, to see NIC grow here would be a really tremendous thing.
Yeah, especially with what they've been doing with the aerospace programs that they've introduced. I think it's really great. Aerospace is going to be another issue. We talked about that with Tamarack, but just in general, it's starting to grow in Sandpoint with Quest and mm-hmm. It's becoming a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And NIC is offering the airplane mechanics program which is really cool.
And there's this group that's actively working to help NIC increase their presence here. So that's kind of on the wish list of things. Well, guys, and we're about at the end of our time. Ben Olson, Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader, thank you very much for coming in and providing the listening public with your wisdom, or at least your guesses.
It's been really fun to have you guys, and would like to have you in on a regular basis.
Well, thanks for having us, guys.
And just a couple things to announce, because Cameron, you looked like you wanted to say something.
I just thank you for having us in. Mm-hmm. It's always a pleasure, mm-hmm. and I've never seen an hour go by so quickly.
I know. We could do another hour easily, I'm sure. But we want to go out with a really cool song by John Prine. However, we do want to make an announcement that Thursday, the KRFY morning show at 88.5 at 8 a.m., we'll have Jack Peterson hosting Patricia Walker-White, executive director of the Panada, along with a board member from the Panada to talk about how their year looks, what happened, what's coming up.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that would be good.
Big part of the town
I don't
as well.
Think we can get to all the New Year's things.
There's
but
a
people
ton of New Year's
go.
Stuff. Yep. KRFY.org. We have a complete calendar. There are several New Year's parties happening. So check that out. It's also on sampleonline.com. In our town, of course, there's always a million things going on. So get involved, go out and have some fun, and be good citizens.
And right? Thanks for listening to 88.5 KRFY. We'll be back here next Tuesday, and we're going to go out with a song. This is John Prine, In a Town This Size, and we hope you have a beautiful day.
Yes, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.